This week on Decentralize, Microsoft is accepting Bitcoin. Also joining us is Paige Peterson from the MadeSafe Project.
I'm Tony Sakic.
And I'm Eric Martindale.
And this is Decentralize.
Alright guys, so what do you guys think about this Microsoft thing? This is huge news.
It is huge news, and it really is a game changer when the second largest company in the world by market share begins accepting Bitcoin for pretty much everything they do. It's not just Xbox, it's also for Office, for all their products online, and who knows what else in the future. It's interesting that Microsoft got there first, right? Before Google, before Apple, before Amazon. It's kind of awesome to actually see Microsoft being on the cutting edge of something. And the narrative really now has been, at least on the Reddit communities and in the news, that Microsoft were the cutting edge company here. And some are saying that it was a response to Apple Pay, which I don't necessarily think is the case, because Apple Pay really isn't nearly as the word would be disruptive as Bitcoin. Bitcoin's a completely different way of doing things. Apple Pay is just, the Malibu Stacy with a new hat, to make a Simpsons quote. So I think it's awesome, obviously. It's interesting to see who's going to be following in their footsteps, like who's next, And it could be a variety of different companies, but the credibility Microsoft lends to Bitcoin in general among the general public is huge. And, we're only going to start to see the repercussions of this in the next few months. This is going to be something that happens overnight.
Yeah. What do you think that the repercussions of this are going to be in the community? I mean, we're already seeing sort of Reddit exploding. The front page of Reddit is almost exclusively Xbox, Microsoft, a massive amount of excitement about this. What do you make of sort of the outpouring of support? Microsoft hasn't had the greatest reputation over the past, few years, and now it seems like everybody's getting on board. Why is that?
Well, I think it's the new CEO, Nadella. I think he's got a big part to do with this. Whenever there's a new leader and leadership change in a large corporation, there's always that saying, like, things are going to change, we're going to innovate. And quite often it's just lip service and things that stay the same. Well, Microsoft, with the announcement that .NET is going open source, this, who knows what's next, they're kind of putting up. They're really saying, hey, we're into this. We understand where things are going. We're going to support this. I don't necessarily know the specific repercussions that are going to happen, but I do know that the entire gaming community is now going to be able to use Bitcoin to top up their accounts in the Microsoft ecosystem, and that's pretty huge, especially because it's going to give a generation that may not have access to banks the ability to, purchase games, credits, whatever they may want, under their own control. They don't necessarily, if you're 12, you can't get a bank. I mean, you can get a bank account, but you can't get a credit card. Now they can just use Bitcoin. Their parents can put $10 or $20 in a week, whatever they would want, and they can use that at their own discretion. And that's pretty neat, and it's going to be, teaching people how transactions will be happening in the future. So Microsoft getting really on the ground floor of this is smart. Of course, we are biased. We're very pro-Bitcoin here. If anyone would have told me 2 years ago Microsoft would be the first, I would consider them a tier A software company to get on board with this, I would have been shocked. But you know what? It's a pleasant surprise, and it's really needed. The more competition in any industry, the better. And they're, proving they want to stay competitive.
Absolutely. So what I find really fascinating is that all of the Xbox users coming over from, the Xbox subreddits and the comments on the various gaming forums, there's a lot of gamers out there who just did not know exactly what Bitcoin was until this announcement. And I'm seeing a massive outpouring of support from the community and, helping people explain. We've overcome, the past couple of years of tons and tons of people asking, what is Bitcoin? What is Bitcoin? And we've all had this experience of trying to explain it to someone. And in a lot of cases, in most cases even, we've all explained it several times, many times, 100 times, certainly for myself. I don't know about everybody else. So now we've sort of refined our ability to explain what is Bitcoin. And that sort of gets people thinking. And this sort of speaks to a larger philosophical shift, I think, that's happening in the overall sort of community in the world, really. certainly within the United States, is this realization, and we've had the recent Ferguson disaster, you know, there's riots in Oakland, there's riots all over from police brutality and sort of aggression against the state because, you know, everyone's really frustrated and upset. And now that they have this ability to sort of think about these things with a perspective of having an example, right, of a way to disintermediate these things, I really do believe that the conversation is shifting, right? You know, we've still got the old guard sort of talking about your traditional, you know, race issues, you know, political issues between, you know, left party, right party, this, that, and the other. But that really is the legacy discussion. We're seeing an increasing amount of young people who are reading about technology, who have access to information thanks to the internet, and they're discovering these interesting points, right? And they're starting to apply these concepts of security and decentralization to their own interests. I know, Tony, you're extremely interested in music. Music was also an additionally interesting conversation. Like early on in terms of decentralization because of the, you know, the whole piracy conversation with Napster bleeding into, you know, ultimately, you know, LimeWire and then BitTorrent, as many things are distributed today. I really do see, and it's just an example to me from this Xbox community, a true and genuine shift in the conversation, in the perspectives, and honestly, the general composition of those who are getting their voices heard. The composition used to be, you know, the old guard, and now it really is the youth and the people who never had the ability to speak out before. I mean, the internet's been around for plenty of time at this point, but now there's issues that they're being exposed to, and they have really good opinions and insight.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if Xbox is going to make those that are now introduced to Bitcoin a part of the philosophical reason to use Bitcoin. I don't know that. I think it's great as a way to introduce it to new people. But I think that, you know, there's I don't really know the way to describe it except an apathy for young people, because for how long have young people's voices not been heard? And I mean that in, you know, we can say whatever we want about unemployment, about what's up with the economy, about, you know, whatever this generation feels about. But the truth of the matter is we were kind of handed a bad deck, you know, we were handed a bad hand of cards here. It's not exactly something that was great. And I love the idea that people are saying, okay, well, I've tried to work within the system and, you know, vote and try to get change that way. I see it's not happening quick enough. And, you know, yes, the government was designed to be slow, but in 2014, things aren't slow anymore. Change needs to be quick. And they're seeing that there's way more change they can do by opting out of this system and using a better system. And that is when you really win hearts and minds. And also, the Bitcoin ecosystem is now at this point where tools exist that make it way easier for someone to become involved. You know, ChangeChip, with what's happening with Microsoft, the fact that the cool part of the Bitcoin community said, hey, we want to introduce Bitcoin to these Xbox users. How can we do that? Let's tip them a dollar or two. Because, you know, if they get that dollar or two, they're going to create a wallet. They're going to be way more likely to buy a little bit, you know. And those are the people we want. We don't want more investors. We want people that are going to be interested in, you know, just playing with this technology, investing, you know, not even investing, putting $20 in Bitcoin and buying it from Circle or something like that and then using it however they wish. And, you know, once you see how easy it is, especially for internet purchases, it really is just, you know, it's something where you go like, why isn't it all this easy? And believe me, the day that, and this is something since we started working on this, that the day where I can go to whatever video game console I have, pull out my Bitcoin wallet on my phone, scan the QR code on my TV screen, and instantly drop $20 in there or $10 in there to buy whatever game I want will be the greatest day of my life, because putting in credit card information with a controller is just the absolute worst. Because no matter what happens, you make one error, you have to do it again, you have to log in right, and it's just not pleasant, right? So here's this great way to do it. And I'm really hoping that within a short amount of time, Bitcoin makes this possible for every console. You know, I'm a pretty big gamer, specifically a console gamer, and this is something I want badly. I want to be able to use any console and, you know, be able to update whatever their, you know, stored value credits are with Bitcoin. I want to be able to do that, and, you know, having this as the first step, along with Zala, which is a payment processor for a lot of gaming companies. They have Twitch, so that's another thing that you can use with Bitcoin now, among others. The gaming space is finally catching up, and I think this is the one where, when Microsoft gets into Bitcoin, it wouldn't be surprised if you're seeing Sony starting to pay attention, you're seeing Nintendo starting to pay attention, you're seeing Ubisoft, you're seeing all these larger gaming companies who now are bigger than movie studios. The media they produce is bigger, it's more profitable, they support more jobs, they're a much more important part of our economy and a part of young culture, right? You may not see as much about the newest, hottest video game, but to be fair, it's more important to what's happening around us than, most movies are or most records or albums are.
Yeah, so I think this is kind of like the gateway moment, the gateway drug moment, right? So these gamers are starting to get exposed to Bitcoin because, Bitcoin is a fundamentally more fitting technology for what gaming is and what monetization in the gaming space might be, right? There is, the transactional element, to send any amount of money. It's like fractions of pennies in most cases. So buying, microtransactions within games, it's a very clear use case. But in the sense that it's a gateway drug and, there's this, fertile ground of, dissent right now in the overall police state that we live in.
By the way, the police state are the ones that invented the term gateway drug.
Of course.
I just had to bring that up.
So what we do is we take their terminology and then we use it against them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you can't speak as a figurehead like that and, ever expect that your centralized power is going to last any duration of time. So it's opening up, like I said, the philosophy of looking at these other, centralized entities. And my sister actually asked me today when I talked about the Microsoft announcement. And I described it that, it's like sort of a new currency designed for the internet age, right? It doesn't depend on any one government. It doesn't depend on a bank. It doesn't depend on a company, right? It works the same way everywhere, regardless of whatever country you're in, allowing for, a type of financial freedom in this case that it just isn't possible with currencies that are centralized, right? And I think this is, as people understand that this is possible with technology, they're going to start applying it to things other than gaming. So this mm-hmm. is the perfectly opportune moment for maybe micropayment channels.
Well, it's happening right now. And, another thing that was a big story before the Microsoft news broke was Reddit. And their new hires, including someone we both know, Ryan X. Charles,
yeah.
And they're basically did an impromptu, almost an AMA session because yeah. of how popular the blog post was, and really discussed what they're planning to do when they issue some of the ownership to the community, and it's going to be different, and completely different, and you're seeing it on Reddit, and I think Reddit's
equity.
A community where this is growing. And, those who really like Reddit, and for all of its faults, it has tons of positives. And they see Reddit and they go, okay, there's a community here that's unique. Quality content is getting voted higher and higher. There's really good subreddits and there's really bad ones. It's like anything else. But you're seeing that, and then you're seeing when they're taking a giant piece of that, and one of their most popular subreddits is the Bitcoin subreddit, and they're using that as part of their future business model.
Yeah.
And that's, much bigger than than people are realizing, just because there's no active plan right now, or we don't know it, nor should we. We don't work for Reddit, but we do know that that's in their plans, and it makes you wonder, like, what are IBM thinking right
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
what are the really really large, the business enterprise companies thinking?
Yeah. So it's like these gateway drugs, right? Like we're starting to see Reddit looking at this, and in my perspective, and I don't know for sure, but I'm almost certain that they've been talking about issuing, equity within the Reddit organization, as a crypto asset. And this is sort of like the next layer of things that is starting to develop. There's so many more uses of the blockchain and decentralized technology, ranging from, of course, rather than a currency being issued on a blockchain, having an asset store on the blockchain. We're already seeing this, of course, with MasterCoin and Counterparty and all of these different asset management platforms. But as these doors kind of get open and people start understanding the base level of the technology, maybe it's in Xbox, maybe it's in Twitch, or maybe hopefully we'll get Valve and Steam to accept Bitcoin soon. They sort of understand and they move into these other areas, and I think we're really on the cusp of a not only a massive adoption of Bitcoin, right? And maybe that's just going to be a slower uptake.
It has to be. I don't think it can be a mass adoption because the internet still hasn't reached mass adoption. There's still people that don't have it.
Right, right. And that will be a slower uptake, right? Because it's just the underlying stratum, right? Like that is everything is building on top of. These other technologies like peer-to-peer networks, mesh networks, microgrids where, power is actually distributed across a microgrid, right? The equity distribution platforms, all of these types of things are really going to be, you know, targeted niche communities that are building up, and they're going to start taking off on their own, independent of the underlying financial aspect of things, right? So that's what I'm really excited. And what when you go look at, you know, all of the discussion forums online, Reddit, Hacker News, GameSpy, like all of these different places, people are really excited about the potential for this technology, and you're seeing a true groundswell movement of people exploring, like, or having the epiphany, the massive realization of the potential of these things, right? The fact that we now have tools to solve problems that we gripe and bitch and whine about every single day.
Yeah.
Well, now we actually have real solutions for these. And you see, like, prime example, these Xbox users, they're starting to get it. And that really, really excites me.
Because it's a part of their lives that's relevant, and that's really important too. And I think that with what you said is awesome and true, but you also have forces against it. And, you know, for every open-minded Xbox user, there's a very terrified 65-year-old that goes, without banks and people controlling it, it's anarchy. That don't understand what problem this solved, or they have too much of an economic incentive to pursue this, you know, and they're maybe not thinking, hey, if I want to keep my economic power, I'm going to roll along this way. Instead, they're saying, I want to control and keep things how they are because that's how I'm benefiting the most. There's a lot of potential issues and wrenches that could be thrown in. I don't even mean regulation. This has nothing to do with regulation. This just has to do with, you know, the overall perception of it. And, you know, for every person that thinks the CEO of Bitcoin's dead, and young people think this too. This is not just a demographic thing, believe me. That's the misinformation that was out there. And the thing with Microsoft is for every single person that it does, you know, attract, it also puts a big target on Bitcoin. And the thing that you mentioned earlier that I think is the most important, and it should be the technology, and by should, I mean in my opinion, of course, that's adopted is a mesh networking system. We need to be able to protect the internet because we're close to not having that freedom. And the quicker that we can have an easy solution for anyone to use, that you don't need much technical expertise, that should be easier than setting up a router, that you can actually access the internet, that's what's needed because that will ensure that this is protected forever. And it will ensure that the internet community exists in the best possible format. And that is where, if I was a venture capitalist, I would be putting funds into and protecting all the rest of these companies that are really, really being built right now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of really exciting companies out there. We happen to have one of them joining us today as our guest, Paige Peterson of MadeSafe. There's of course, tons of other companies like Storage who are applying this decentralized technology to other fields such as, you know, cloud storage and cloud computing and all of these things. But one of the things I'm really excited about is the basic underlying strata of the network, the communication protocol, because flat out today we simply do not have the freedom to communicate freely. The NSA watches every single message. They attack and intercept everything, all in the name of national security. GCHQ, this is it. This is not a phenomenon that's limited to the United States. And in order for us to restore our individual liberties and freedoms, we need to take a look at technologies like MadeSafe.
Yeah, and you know, remember, for everything like this, the I would say overarching power of the government creates a really good place for competition and for new technologies to come out, and that's kind of how Bitcoin grew. And that's kind of how BitTorrent grew, is because, you know, customers were angry. It comes down to that. When customers feel gypped, they're very happy to move to a better alternative. And customers felt gypped by, you know, their financial solutions, and something better came along. And, you know, we're slowly getting them on board. And it's going to happen with everything else because, you know, the best product wins in free market. It works. You know, it does work.
Free market economies for the win. And with that, we'll bring on our guest. All right, today we have Paige Peterson, currently with Madesafe and previously from the Open Garden. Welcome to the show, Paige.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm really happy to be here.
Absolutely. So I want to get us started off with, tell us exactly, what is Madesafe?
So Madesafe is essentially a set of new internet protocols that, when put together, help alleviate our dependence on servers and sort of essentially creating an entirely new structure for the internet based on peer-to-peer computers and smartphones and tablets connecting directly to each other, and basically replacing the model that we have with clients and servers, making it completely peer-to-peer, so we're not dependent on these servers to secure our files and whatnot for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're obviously huge fans of this sort of disintermediation idea, but I believe Madesafe has been around for quite some time, right? Tell us a little bit about the background of where Madesafe came from and how they got to where they are today.
So Madesafe was founded in 2006 by David Irvine. He's a longtime network systems engineer. He had been working on large scale networks for a while and kind of solving a lot of the issues that companies were having. However, kept noticing persistent issues when dealing with servers, and kind of came to the conclusion that servers in and of themselves were the central problem with the internet in terms of security, and, you know, everything that comes with that, privacy. So he basically set out and kind of like did some soul searching. He went out into nature. He went on to his sailboat for a while and just kind of like sat and thought about how to build this new internet. And he based a lot of it on his observations and interest in natural complex systems. So one analogy we like to use a lot is ant colonies, because the ants themselves are individual sort of nodes in their colony, but with very specific rules and not a lot of power in and of themselves. But when you put them together with other ants in a colony, they create this really complex system that can do a lot of things. So it's really based around the idea that nature doesn't evolve systems like client server systems that we have with the current internet. Therefore, we can, by observing nature and kind of mimicking the systems that it puts out, we can come up with more resilient and efficient systems in the long run.
Absolutely fantastic. So that's a really big picture, and it seems like he came to the correct conclusion, in our opinion, pretty quickly. What was it about the internet, if you can describe, maybe for the people who may not be familiar with it, what is it exactly about the internet that needs to be fixed? I mean, hey, it's working great, right, Paige?
Ooh, I mean, if you're okay with the NSA spying on you and...
You mean the NSA,
you know,
spying on us? I don't believe it.
Yes.
Show me documents.
You know, it's weird. I read something in the news the other day. It's kind of weird. But so, you know, there's the whole privacy thing with these central servers. Yes, you know, Dropbox can secure their servers from potential. They can secure their servers well enough that it's extremely difficult for malicious hackers to, you know, break in and steal files and corrupt data. However, you have this whole, you know, kind of higher up power that essentially can, you know, do whatever they want with your data. So there's that, like, one main thing. But there's also, like, generally malicious hackers, like, you know, all these, like, financial data leaks, like Home Depot and Target and all of that. All of those are because they're storing these files, or they're storing this information in servers, which are centralized computers. And if you think about it, what is a server? It's a computer that someone else owns. So you're literally uploading all of your files, doing all your computations. If you're like running a website or something using some sort of backend, you're depending on other people controlling these computers to be good with your data and to not act poorly.
And when you bring up the issue of security, I think that's an interesting one, because it's weird when you see people that get into decentralization as a thought or as, you know, an application. They come from two schools of thought that I've seen that are similar and related. One are the privacy advocates, who really believe that, you know, all communications should be kept private, and decentralization is a way that they can ensure that. And then there are other folks that come aboard. I'm more the latter. I'm a big fan of privacy, but I think more importantly is making sure that everyone has access to that information. And when the big topics like net neutrality come up, you know, it becomes something where if there is a mesh network, therefore the cost to participate for anyone from, you know, people living in the wealthiest cities in the world to the people living in the poorest third world countries becomes essentially the same and low, because they're a node on a network that's going to be expanding. So they no longer would need to pay the ridiculous fees in order to access the internet that may be needed. Because if you're in sub-Saharan Africa, the way that you're getting online is via satellite connection, or, you know, if you're maybe in a very large city, you might be lucky enough to find someone with an internet connection. And getting those last miles of internet access is going to be important, and giving them access to information is essential. One of those people could be the one that, you know, cures some crazy disease. You know, there's all this untapped human potential. I fall into the latter, and I think that it's interesting that either way, there's one answer to both problems, and it's really giving people the power again. And it's, you know, it really is about a true way to show that you have power over your own. With Bitcoin, it's finance. You know, with mesh networks, it's over your information that you're accessing and sharing. With encryption, it's control over, you know, who's seeing what. And it's essential and important, and really a problem, and not just a problem, but an issue that's very, you know, it's very tailored to the last decade. Because if there's some people you speak on this, and I'm talking about people, I'm 30, and I'm talking about people younger than me that have no idea about this. We're in the select few that get it right now. And, you know, and those, I think, mm-hmm. that get it are, like yourself, are working toward achieving that, and working in companies that are trying to achieve that, and realize, you know, the free market's the best way that these solutions are going to come up, because you cannot depend on any other outside source to really defend that, other than, you know, companies that are trying to do right. And it's hard to identify those, and you're seeing a lot of them now turning that way. You're seeing these large companies seeing this, and they're, you know, they're going, okay, well, we can see where this is headed. Let's get ahead of this, so make sure that we're, you know, competitive in the future.
Right. Yeah, it's really essential for to kind of create these systems so that companies can just kind of latch on and start using them. So one of the biggest benefits of MadeSafe to any developer is going to be the fact that you're not going to have to spend so many resources on general security and whatnot. Like, all of that is going to be it's going to be inherent to the network. It's going to be, if you're building an app, you're going to have that security by default and distribution by default. So it's really about kind of removing all of the resources and time that needs to be spent towards actually securing it, and making, like, the root protocols the secure part, and then building on top of it.
Yeah, Paige, you touch on something really important here. So when we talk about, you know, oh, the internet is great, but, you know, we've still got all this NSA spying, we've got all these privacy concerns, we've got centralized entities using the people who are using their products as their products, right? Like Facebook, yep. For example, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. They're receiving money from advertisers and selling, basically, your eyeballs. So what you're touching on here, I think, is what's most important, is that things need to be secured by default. The internet is kind of like the very first draft, right? Like we built this network, it's succeeded, it's grown, it's changed the world. You know, many billion-dollar companies have been created as a result of this internet. However, it's going to be kind of difficult to kind of shift this entrenched system to one that is – it has to be fundamentally redesigned to be encrypted by default, decentralized by default, where there is no opportunity for centralized providers to assert control without the voluntary opt-in of the individual. Talk to me a little bit about the steps needed to displace this entrenched behemoth, whether it be the internet or in some of these other economic situations that we talk about.
Well, so in terms of kind of going back to securing it by default, it's really about – so essentially you're still facing the same problem with other people owning computers, even in a decentralized internet. So you have to, like, work within that and recognize that even if, say, someone – like, for example, we want – there's going to still be servers that exist in, like, after MadeSafe is launched and hopefully going mainstream. But the idea is that you can set up those servers and provide those servers to the network, to this new internet. However, there's no way for you to be liable for anything that's stored on it. It's really just about making a completely trustless system so that you don't need to trust the peers in the network. And I think that's really essential for the evolution of how the internet's going to go. And in addition to this concept of kind of reworking models, I think that is also going to push I think the development of applications and even like all these huge services like Facebook, I think those products and products like that are going to be really popular are going to be pushed out to the edge so that, you know, individual developers and very small companies will be able to create just as robust systems as anything that Facebook could build on this new internet. So we're also talking about making the business models for large corporations like Facebook, basically forcing them to have to switch their mindset or just be, you know, lost in the past. If they're not willing to kind of evolve with this new internet, then these small developers, you know, small teams of developers that want to make a Facebook replacement for on top of MadeSafe, but don't have to spend all these resources on security and whatnot, they're going to be the ones that are taking over, and they're going to benefit from the start, and they're going to kind of have like first mover advantage. So I think, you know, creating these new systems kind of decentralizes the corporations in and of themselves, making it a lot easier for individuals to just participate. And, you know, obviously the biggest disintermediation we're talking about here is like, you know, services like Google, but even just like underlying like infrastructure, like AWS, Amazon Web Services, they have like 6 or 7 data centers total, and which stores like, you know, 100, almost 200 different countries worth of data. And it's just like, they're going to be forced to think of new models for how they're making money and everything. And what this additionally, what the Safe Network will be able to provide for developers is with the cryptocurrency that is built into the network, the developers will be able to earn SafeCoin as a sort of it's calculated by the network, but it's basically how useful your application is. There's 10% of all SafeCoin is going to application developers. So there's like this farming pool for network nodes, and then there's also this 10% pool for developers to just have, like, by default be able to earn SafeCoin and not have to worry about, you know, putting ads or doing, you know, lots of customer support or anything like that. It's going to essentially open up this new ecosystem that I'm actually really excited about. That's like one of the more and more I think about this whole SafeCoin and like essentially as think about it as if the World Wide Web had launched with a cryptocurrency built in, and like what the possibilities of that would bring in terms of content creators, developers, service providers, consumers, and just like having all of that just inherent into the network is, I think, really exciting.
Absolutely.
To me.
No, it excites all of us very deeply as well. And you talk a little bit about, you know, developers, and I agree. I think maybe the people who are building these applications, who are building the actual utilizations of the technology, are going to be who are carrying the banner forward for everyone else in society. And as we sort of move towards a mass algorithm society in which everyone knows how to code, we're not there yet, but more and more people are learning how to code. What can the people who are engineers, software engineers, designers do today on the MadeSafe platform, and how can they assist carry that banner down the line?
So right now we are we're essentially in the second phase of our testing, and are actively putting together an API which will drastically reduce the barrier to entry to working with the Safe Network. Right now, it's a little difficult. There are a few people already building applications using kind of the core libraries without the API yet. But once the API is ready, it'll kind of open up the floodgates for anyone that wants to build any sort of decentralized application. And in terms of, you know, designers and even just content creators, because the network doesn't exist yet, there's like not much to benefit from the network right now. But once the network is launched, which is looking to be around February or March, I believe, individuals like that are designers or content creators will able to essentially earn money and earn these tokens for the content they create from the consumers directly peer to peer without having to think about any sort of like you know any issues that come with content consumption today and compensating them. It's almost like if like Change Tip was built into the network or something like that, a very like inherent way for like instead of pressing like on Facebook, you can press, you know, tip, and it just like gives you the option. Like there's just so many possibilities for artists and whatnot once the network is live. But for now, we're definitely focusing on developers and trying to get developers building and interested in the network. And yeah.
Awesome. So as I understand it, if I as a developer come to the platform, am I going to be earning Bitcoin as part of this, or is it something else, right?
It's SafeCoin. Yeah, it's an inherent cryptocurrency in the network. It's going to be the first non-blockchain cryptocurrency that is, you know, it's a completely different protocol than blockchain.
Sure.
And however, it's just as secure and, you know, not to like start anything, but potentially more secure. And we're really excited about the potential that it'll bring, complementary protocol to what blockchain has.
Right. So I've been reading.
Started. We think there's a lot of benefits to.
Go on, finish up.
So essentially, the biggest benefits of something like an alternative protocol for exchanging value. If you're looking at blockchain technology, that is extremely good for accountability and transparency. And if you want, you know, organizations to be transparent and like push them to use, you would push them to use protocols like blockchain technology to do their finances. However, for individuals, you know, there is that lack of ability to stay anonymous with blockchain technology for now. People are building on top of it and trying to kind of route around the fact that blockchain technology is a global public ledger. But the fact of the matter is that it is a global public ledger, and anything built on top is just trying to like just route around that fact. And what MadeSafe has built is kind of like a completely different way to transfer value without needing to put it on a public ledger, and it essentially making it what is anonymous, but like 99.9% more anonymous than anything that we've ever had. So I think that'll be interesting in terms of like the economics, if people are realizing that this token is inherently anonymous. That might be interesting as well, but I'm honestly more excited about the whole like ecosystem within the network and like content creators and developers and stuff. I'm more excited about that stuff.
Excellent. And I'm sure we'll share some links along with this podcast to point out the technical implementation details of that. So talk to us a little bit about that. We got about 10 minutes left. Talk to us about the future and what do you think that the implications of this are going to be?
I mean, complete privacy, security, and freedom for individuals. You're not going to have to worry about your files and your data being lost or stolen or anything. I think there's in terms of like the digital economy, I think it's going to change everything. I think it's going to sort of force a new direction for this whole intellectual property debate, because within MadeSafe or within the Safe Network, it will be extremely easy for individuals to share data, any kind of data and whatnot. So I think we're going to start seeing like a force, a force in the mind shift for how we're thinking about data and how sharing data is actually, you know, going to be more profitable and or at least be more useful for the society as a whole, particularly with like research and science right now. That whole field is like bogged down by IP, and it's extremely difficult to do progress because of that. And with something like MadeSafe, it'll be extremely easy for researchers to essentially earn an income and earn a proper value for the research that they've done without having to go through these central institutions and kind of do the publishing thing. And so there's so many things about the future that I could talk about with MadeSafe, but if you boil it down, it's completely going to remove the middlemen in the internet. There will be middlemen, like, however, they will, the middlemen will need to be proving themselves. It won't be this sort of monopolized structure that you see with the internet today with Facebook and Google. I guess just like essentially it's removing the shadiness of middlemen or the ability to be shady as a middleman.
Yeah,
you're going to be forced to provide value. If you're not providing value, then people aren't going to use your applications. That's
right.
Just how it's going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of it's a built-in sort of proof of reputation system where people are forced to deliver value. And if they don't, then there's a completely level playing field for anyone who's capable of delivering a better value to swoop in and pick that up. So rather than, there will be some centralized parties, right, where they're just the best service providers, right?
Right, like content aggregators. Like, for example, Bitcoin Magazine, that if they build something on top of MadeSafe, a lot of people would use their service because they're aggregating a bunch of Bitcoin material, but they're also not having to deal with servers or, deal with being the middleman in terms of, like, paying the content creators and all of that. It's going to remove a lot of the problems that they would face. But people would still find value in that. Therefore, they would still be a, kind of a useful middleman. But to contrast, things like the iTunes store, that's just like this huge monolithic thing that's taking a lot of the income away from the actual content creators. Those are going to be the ones that are disintermediated and going to need to kind of find new business models because it'll be so easy for someone to set up the exact same thing. For cheaper.
Hear, Paige.
Yeah, I really do think that's the future in that. And it's just a matter of the difficulty in getting artists aboard some idea like that. Because here's the thing is I actually worked in music in the past, and the industry resistance to iTunes was huge. It wasn't something they wanted to do. In fact, they totally didn't want to do it. Almost every major label scoffed at it. Said, 99 cents a track, what are we, you're killing us, And the amount of resistance was incredible. It only, really took a decentralized technology to make them realize that, hey, if we don't do this, we're not going to make any money. And taking that to the next level and then saying, okay, well, you can control your art and you can control the distribution channels of your art. But in order to do that, you do have to have a little bit of technical expertise. And I'm not saying a lot, but you have to have a little bit. And you need to be able to understand the systems is going to be difficult. And I think that's something – that's the challenge, really, because, most of us that are exposed to this think it's an inevitability. And I think it is to some degree, but the timetable is what everyone disagrees on, right? And I don't think that – I don't think the infrastructure is there yet, close to that there yet, for something like that to take place right now that would be widely used. The fact that if you would like to download the new Thom Yorke record that was sold for a BitTorrent bundle and you use iOS, it's not exactly a pleasant experience. In fact, it would take multiple tries in different, you need a PC to do that of some sort. And I think that we're going to get there. And I think when artists can control their own art and the commerce that is derived from that art, it will be a good day for everyone. And there are people that are working on it. There are ideas out there. And it's something where, it's coming. And I really don't know much more to say on it other than it's coming and pay attention because there's places where you can see why and how it's coming. And it'll be awesome. But we're actually almost going to wrap it up. But I wanted to give you one quick question. What companies in this space are you excited about? What companies really, make you pay attention and sit back, besides your own, of course?
Actually, I'm really excited about BlockTech. They're working on this project called Alexandria, which is essentially embedding history into a blockchain. So like hashing tweets and stuff and putting those hashes into a blockchain, you know, obviously in reference to the Library of Alexandria that was burned down. I think that kind of use of blockchain technology is so perfect. Like that is, apps like that are in my mind sort of the killer app for blockchain technology. And generally what they're trying to do with, you know, public, working with the fact that blockchain is a public ledger and, you know, finding the best possible use cases for that sort of thing. So I'm really excited about block tech. And I actually also am really excited. They're actually both in San Diego, but I'm also really excited about Airbits just because they seem to be focusing a lot on making wallets super easy, but also making the security pretty inherent as well. So along the same mindset of what MadeSafe and, you know, the inherent security and privacy. So it would be awesome to see both of those companies work with MadeSafe for sort of their back end. And I know there's a little bit of interest in that, but that would be so killer if they could kind of make use of blockchain technology for these purposes and then use like MadeSafe as their back end. I think that would be really powerful and disruptive. So those are my two really excited about companies.
Fantastic, Paige. All right. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a fantastic conversation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, guys. I had a lot of fun.